Hi, everyone. This is Ron Pitchler. We're here today with Mr. Mike Swalling. This is an AGC podcast. Welcome, Mike. We'd like to see you here.
Thank you, Ron.
Yeah, so we're going to start with a quick introduction here and talk a little bit about history. Mike, I don't know if you've had a chance to see this month's Alaska Contractor magazine from the AGC, but there's a great member profile story of you with seven decades of work in Alaska here. So can you comment on that a little bit,
Ron? I just saw it as I walked into the office here, and John McKinnon showed it to me, and I'm pretty impressed with it. They did a good job.
As you should be. It's a great brief on your history there and people that you've worked with in the industry. So it's something everybody in the AGC should take a look at, and it tells a little bit about your past.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about your family? I know your family's been, as it says in here, seven decades.
Well, going way back, Ron, I had two grandfathers that came up in the gold rush, and one of them stayed up here, and the other one went back to Washington after the summer. But my dad came up in 1929 and began working on the Copper River and Northwestern Railway. Worked on them on that project for 10 years, or that railroad for 10 years. And then when the railroad shut down, he went back to carpentry, and he opened a contracting business in Cordova and worked that for several years. And then World War II broke out. He was in Whittier at the time and ended up staying about two or three years in Whittier driving the tunnel, and then went out to the Aleutians and finished the war out there, then came back to Anchorage in 1946 and started Swalling Construction with a friend of his, and then that's where it started all.
Oh, wow, 1946, huh?
Yeah.
Do you remember what year the Whittier Tunnel was put through?
They started, I think, in 40, late 39 or 40,
mm-hmm.
And I know when Pearl Harbor occurred, he was there, and the radio operator told him about the attack in Pearl Harbor. So the tunnel was being built at that time. It was my understanding that the Defense Department was looking for an alternate route into the interior for the railroad, because they were worried that Seward would be put out of commission and they wouldn't be able to get supplies into the interior. So that's the reason Whittier was built.
Huh? Now that's a good little piece of Alaska history there. Great. Well, that's great. So you came up from... You were born here in Anchorage?
Yes, I was. Yeah.
Okay, so you're Alaskan all the way then.
Yeah, 1947.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you're a Providence Hospital kid?
I'm an old Providence Hospital baby, yes.
Well, welcome to the group there. I came 10 years after you, but same place. Yeah. It's now a Benihana's, I believe.
Yes, it is. Yes.
All right. So you were saying, we were talking earlier about statehood, and I wanted to get your take on statehood. You remember that. You were a very young man.
I was 12 at the time, and I remember I was outside, and I heard the sirens one afternoon that announcing essentially the vote, I guess, in Washington, D.C. At the time, and I remember asking somebody what that was, and somebody said it was statehood. And then I do remember the bonfire that they had on the park strip. Muktuk Marston decided that we had to have a bonfire to celebrate it, and they collected 50 tons of wood is what they were shooting for. And they collected, I think, all of that or more. And then a day or two prior to the scheduled bonfire, some kids or vandals came in and lit it up beforehand, so they had to find more stuff and have it again. But I do recall the bonfire that they had. It was quite a sight.
All right. Well, that's another little good part of Alaska history. So You know, statehood came. Your dad had been in business there. Were you very involved in the business back then? I imagine you're just a young guy going to school.
I was pretty young going to school. I didn't really get involved in the business until I was 16 and I could drive. Mm-hmm. And back then the laws were a little looser. You could drive at 16 and be an expediter or whatever it took. You could drive a truck. And I know I had some friends that did at 16. And so I started working summers as an expediter, and then I, 18, I joined the laborers and worked several summers as a laborer. Went in the service in 1970, got out in late 71.
What branch of the military?
Army.
Okay.
And then came back to Anchorage and started working for the company back in actually summer of 72.
All right. What schools did you go to in Anchorage here?
I went to Denali, the original one.
The one down on 9th Avenue, that Denali? Or was
the
it?
One on, yeah, 9th Avenue, yeah. the original one. And then I went to North Star.
Okay.
I went to Turnigan, then Old Central. And then I went outside to high school. And then I was gone for about 9 years all in.
Oh, really? And you went to college out there also?
High school and college outside and 2 years in the military. And
oh, wow. So you were traveling quite a bit.
I was gone a lot.
Yeah. My gosh. So you missed the earthquake, but your dad was busier than all get out, you said?
I missed the earthquake. I was out at school. My folks were in the house and had some interesting stories about writing that out. And then
because they were in Turnigan at the time?
They were in Turnigan and right on the bluff. And theirs was the only house on the bluff that didn't go over. And they gathered up a bunch of neighbors in the station wagon, and everybody was afraid of a tidal wave, and so they all went out towards where Providence Hospital is located now, just trying to make sure that, you know, they were far enough away. So I don't know how many people they had in the car that night, but it was a lot.
So they were worried about tsunami then, huh?
Well, it was a rumor. Nobody knew.
Oh, I see.
It was just, you know, so they evacuated.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's interesting because I know... We know Valdez got hit. We know, I don't,
Seward,
we know,
Seward Valdez, got Seward hit really and Kodiak bad. And Chiniga.
There you go. Chiniga. Yeah. But who didn't get hit there? Whittier didn't get anything?
Oh, Whittier got.
Whittier got it too?
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, yeah? All right. Well, there's a little, I like that. So you came back from school and got involved with the company, or back from the Army and got involved with the company.
I did, yeah.
And then things started to grow from there and... what did you see during the pipeline era?
It's kind of funny. We did some work for Alyeska prior to the pipeline, doing pile testing and programs for a couple of years. And then when the pipeline finally was authorized and all of these big companies came up there, they pretty much stuck to themselves, and we ended up doing virtually no work on the pipeline. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there was all of this work locally that had to be done, and so we focused on that, and while everybody else was working on the pipeline, we were basically working around Anchorage and the area, doing the other stuff. And it was actually pretty good, it was a good market. It really was. It was a lot of fun.
No, and I can comment on that, because my partner and I appreciate all the work that we've done with you over the years. We've done some pretty nice jobs with you, so we appreciate that. I know you've rode some economic storms here, like we all have. We did have some slowdowns in the 80s, and of course with the oil prices going down and the effects that had on all of us, things did tend to change a little bit around the late 80s there. The Exxon Valdez always comes to mind as a precursor to change for Alaska's economy. Did you also see a change during that time period?
There's, like you said, this economy ebbs and flows on oil. And before the pipeline, there was what I refer to as the pre-pipeline depression. And then, of course, when the pipeline hit, everything was great. And then when it stopped, everybody thought it was the good times were going to continue, and there was just, compared to the pipeline, there was just no work. And so there was a post-pipeline, I've referred to it as the depression, but it was just a real slowdown in the industry. Mm-hmm. And then oil prices came back, and we had the 80s boom, of course, which everybody remembers. And then the prices dropped to like 10 bucks a barrel or so. And in the mid-80s, that really hurt everybody. Mm-hmm. And it was really tough to make a living back then.
Oh, yes, it was.
It was hard. And then little by little, you know, as oil prices recovered and the economy recovered, we recovered along with it and tried to stay the course. And it's been an ebb and flow ever since, up and down with the economic activity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we see it in our business, and it's reflected. I see in the article here that it states that you have done a lot of work with the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company over the years.
We did their first change out of the loading arms in 1988 and 89. The loading arms are these big articulated structures that follow the ship up and down and connect it when they're loading oil. And after about 8 or 10 years, they wear out and they have to be replaced. And so we got the first contract with them for those 2 years. And then about every 8 to 10 years, they invite us again to participate. And we've done it now ever since then. We just finished one. I think the latest one was done in we finished our latest one in 1916, I think, or 2016 and whatnot. So they've been very good to work for. They're very exacting. They obviously have set some very high standards and expect you to meet them. But they're good to work for.
Have you done any of the VSM replacements over the years? I know you guys have big cranes.
We've done some up in the Squirrel Creek area.
Ooh, that's a steep hill.
There's some interesting access issues getting in there.
Yeah.
But we've done a few. As the piles move over the years, we've replaced a few of them, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Well, there's a lot of those.
Yeah.
There's a lot of those out there. So when you go into looking at challenging projects, you know, is there any that really come to mind? I know you mentioned these loading arms. They sound pretty challenging. Any other big epic projects that you can think of?
All the work on the North Slope has been challenging. We've done quite a few bridges up there, mostly for Conoco, and it's been good work, but it's extremely challenging to work in that environment because it's, as you know, it's all winter work. It's dark. It's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week until you get it done. And as soon as it starts to melt, you're off the ice and back to base again and whatnot. So those are logistically some of the toughest ones. We've also worked out in the Aleutians and on the West Coast and things like that. And they have their own access issues and logistics, et cetera, just like everybody else or all these other places do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Alaska is a challenging place to mm-hmm. be doing construction work, that's
yeah.
for sure. There's lots of, there can be lots of pitfalls if things go bad
yeah.
and barges don't show up on time. And
exactly.
And, you know, that's just how it goes. But all in all, I mean, when you look at things now currently, fast forward to today's economy, we're kind of in a flat area. You know, I know I've been working on a few bids with you here recently. You're out beating the streets looking for work. Is this year looking okay?
I think it's still too early to tell.
Uh-huh.
It's really early in the season, and we'll see what transpires. I think we're coming back, but it's slow.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of people out there looking for work. A lot of new players in the market.
Yeah, that's I tend to agree with you there. Well, good. You're still here and you're still kicking and we're doing good. Tell me a little bit. I know you're the past president of the AGC, and I know your father was also a past president of the AGC. What can you tell me about your involvement with the AGC, and has it helped you over the years?
I think it has, Ron. I was head of it a long, long time ago.
Uh-huh.
But I've still tried to stay involved
right,
over
I
the years
that.
In various capacities and things like that. What I really watched, you know, the organization grow and change and involve other people, and especially a lot of the younger contractors that are coming up it's such a different organization now than it was 20 years ago, or especially 30 and 40 years ago. It's really amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't think people back then would recognize the difference in the services and what the organization provides compared to what we did a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And it's really good to see it as it's developed.
Well, that's good. You're seeing, I know through the university system, we're starting to see more, we had always had the apprentice mm-hmm. programs through the mm-hmm. unions, but right. now through the university systems, we have the new construction management degrees. That's can you comment great, on that at all?
Yes, I can. I've been on that advisory board since the inception, and they're getting a highly qualified cadre of students graduating from that program. It's been very successful, very popular, and they do a marvelous job of educating those younger folks. And actually, a lot of them aren't younger. There's some of them. They're mostly non-traditional students that have had careers somewhere else and have current jobs, and they're still going to school and whatnot. But they're turning out, I think, some marvelous, wonderfully trained people for the industry to go out. And the latest stats I've heard of, 90% of them have a job after graduation, and they're still in the industry working somewhere.
Mm, no, that's good. I like seeing that. I know. My partner and I are trying to mine some of that youthfulness mm-hmm. and education. So we'll be looking into that. When you look at your business today, what do you think for the future of Swallen Construction? I mean, I know you and your wife have been super involved in the construction industry, and
well,
here you are today.
I'm getting along a little yeah. bit, but I'm going to be active in some capacity. Uh-huh. I'm not quite sure what yet.
Uh-huh.
That too remains to be determined. But I don't intend to retire.
So the plan is to keep things moving forward.
Keep things moving forward in some capacity somehow.
Oh, there you go. Well, that's good news for our little business. We'd like to help you out. So. You know, and anything we can. I know I fly around on occasion, and I swear I hear somebody that sounds just like you on the radio out there by Lakewood. Are you a pilot?
Yeah.
You are?
Yeah.
Okay, so you, that must be you then.
It is.
So
yeah.
You're, why don't you tell me a little bit about your flying?
Well, I started flying when I was 18. Out at International.
Oh, wow.
And got my license when I was 20, and then got a commercial ticket and an instructor certificate, and ended up back in the Army and did some instruction back east, went overseas and came back, and then eventually bought an airplane up here and continued flying again. And I've been doing it ever since, and I enjoy it. I volunteer for the Iditarod.
Oh, really?
And I've been flying for them now for 10 years.
Wow. So you're part of the Iditarod Air Force
yeah,
there then, huh?
And it's a lot of fun.
Oh, wow.
Really.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? How does that work?
It works pretty well, Ron.
I mean, are you flying dogs? Are you flying dog food?
We
are you
fly
flying people? Or what do you, how does it
at
work?
At the beginning of the race, they have the big flyout with supplies, straw, food, and everything else to the checkpoints. And then once the race starts, you're flying vets, race officials, supplies, and whatnot from checkpoint to checkpoint. And then as the last musher leaves the checkpoint, that whole checkpoint packs up and moves further up the trail. So it's this rolling logistical exercise as it moves all the way up to Nome. And we provide support, basically. Every day is a new day, depending on where the race is, what the weather is, and who needs to be moved. Dogs to pick up, veterinarians to move, race judges. You never know.
How are you able to do that with the weather? Like this year where you had such snowy weather. I mean, you can't be flying there.
You wait.
You wait it out. And
everybody understands
yeah.
if the weather's down, you wait.
Wow.
And there are days you literally can't do anything, and everybody on the ground has to understand it. It's a dog race.
Huh?
We're not here to hurt people or anything else. And when the weather gets good enough, everything will move.
How many participants, how many airplanes do you usually
they
fly?
They had, this year, they had about 23 or 24 airplanes.
Wow, and every different type, Super Cub?
Most of them are 180s, 180s, 185s, and 182 and a 206.
What kind of aircraft do you fly?
The 206.
You got a 206.
Yeah.
So that's a big aircraft. You got
A lot of room, a lot of capacity, and I fly usually the western half of the race because it's mostly airfield to airfield. The first half is mostly ski strips, and there's not a lot of room to maneuver, so the 180s, 185s, tailwheel aircraft are best for those.
So you're doing the airports then, primarily?
I'm based in Unalakleet usually, and then doing airport-to-airport stuff, because the western half of the race is basically there's towns and airports in virtually all of the checkpoints except Eagle Island.
Mm-hmm.
So it works really well.
You know my friend Jim Tweedo out there in Unalakleet?
I've met the Tweedos, and I see them flying by in Unalakleet a lot. And when Ariel, of course, was on TV, there were helicopters flying over, and it was quite a show.
Yeah. Jim and I go way back. Him and I played for the old Anchorage Wolverines hockey team when he first came up here back in the 70s.
Yeah.
But then he became a very popular aircraft pilot.
Yeah, he did.
And he's doing real well.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, he is a good guy. I just spoke with him the other day. He's doing good. Why don't you tell me a little bit? I know your wife has been very involved in the history of the AGC, and I know that your mom and your dad put together a lot of old, I don't know what kind of films they were, but years ago you said that they had tried to put an archive together of some of the old past presidents, and they were something similar to this, except they were videos instead of podcasts.
They were, and I'm trying to think of when this was. I think it was the either late 80s or early 90s. My wife was doing the annual banquet, organizing that. The AGC had hired her firm to do that, and she put together some videos of the old timers from that time. And there was Ernie Cassie and Jack Miller and my dad and Leo Walsh, among others, that I recall being part of that. And I'm going to make a concentrated search for those tapes. We may have them someplace. I just don't know. I thought that AGC might have kept them, but apparently not, or they've been lost. It was a long time ago, obviously,
right,
and several moves.
Yeah.
But I'm going to look for them, and if I can find them, I'm going to turn them over to AGC, because they'd be interesting historical artifacts, if you will.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do here with these podcasts, is try to get a sense of history of the Associated General Contractors in Alaska, and you're participating in this helps us out quite a bit. So, and if you can, or if your wife can find that box of those would be awesome for us. So we're keeping moving forward on our history here with the Associated General Contractors. What other fun stuff's going on for you? Anything, you traveling?
Not doing much traveling right now. I usually get out and do a little fishing in the summer and some bird hunting in the fall.
Uh-huh.
And then I did a rod in the early spring.
So that keeps you rolling.
That keeps me rolling, keeps me pretty occupied.
Yeah, well,
that sort of stuff.
I know flying in Alaska is a big hobby, and if you're doing that, that can keep you going all year.
It's good therapy, Ron.
Yes.
Really good therapy.
I would concur with that. Well, gosh, I want to thank you for, that's about all I have right at the moment. I want to thank you for your time and for all you've done for AGC over all these years that you've been involved in it and your family's been involved in it. So from the AGC to you, thank you very much. And if there's any other parting comments, you got anything you want?
Ron, I appreciate the opportunity. It was good to be here.
All right.
Thanks.
Well, thank you much, Mike. And to our listening audience, thank you. And we're out of here. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Alaska Works Podcast, brought to you by a generous contribution from the Construction Industry Progress Fund and the Associated General Contractors of Alaska.